Welcome to the Minute Eight Gang Podcast, episode 225, Deuce and a Quarter. It's Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Buenos dias.
Phil Wilson.
When I wear underwear, I rarely wear anything.
You are the most interesting man in the world.
I am the most interesting man in the world.
Where the heck is the Graham?
He's up in Ely, Minnesota, freezing his butt off. He tweeted that it was 39 degrees up there.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, it's only 52 down here in Lakeville.
Well, that's what it is here in sunny Eden Prairie, but oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's interesting. Kind of really makes you think about the whole global warming thing. I just wish that we had some consistency on this.
No, it's not global warming. It's climate change.
This end of the world stuff. I'd really like to know.
No, they changed it to climate change so they can get away with it getting warmer now.
Oh, now stop saying
warmer and colder and all this stuff.
Yeah. They. Yeah.
Hey, just watch Paul Douglas in Almanac and read his thing in the paper and all that. And he just talks about the shift in the jet stream and.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
Because the ice is melting and yeah. Anyway.
But a reality.
Yeah, but who's causing it? We don't know.
I think it's your fault, Tim.
Yeah, it probably is.
I thought about that too. You're rubbing that Android device way too fast and it's creating a lot of heat. All right, so let's jump into the stories. Twin Cities tech firm raises $2.5 million, but I don't know this software company, this data mining
software
company. That's
why I put it in.
Company, InfoBionics.
Yeah, it sounded like something that NSA would use. And if you look at it, their first round, which was in 2006, was
CIA.
CIA-backed company. So, I think you don't know about them because they don't want you to know about them.
Right, they're in stealth mode.
But the spooks know about them, apparently.
Well, they
very interesting.
Probably got some smart people then that are doing this. But I hadn't heard about them. I mean, this is a space though that is accelerating, and there's a lot of companies that are in it. Now, like this one, this InfoBionics does bioinformatics, and there's a lot of genetic data that these companies are dealing with. Like Mayo Clinic, for example, and they need software that can do things better, cheaper, faster. And I'm wondering if we're going to see a lot more of that coming out of that space, but the biometrics space. I don't know.
You know, what really, really irks me is that there's stuff out there like software being developed by these firms that clearly have, a really solid base have can do great things and very important work. And they're taking all the money away from the crappy little projects that I get involved in.
There you go.
But it is always interesting to see, where the money goes and clearly there's a profit margin to be made in whatever this particular firm is building.
Well, no question. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm going to dig around. I've got a PDF press release about this strategic investment in InfoBionics. I'll put on the show notes, but it's going to be real interesting to see what happens with the whole data mining space. And I think this mini analytics group that's here in town is going to get a lot more traction because they sure came out of the chute and have a lot of people attending these events.
Very much so. Yeah.
So very interesting. Well, another good story, and this is one I gotta tell you.
Blew me away.
I love Deluxe Corp, but I'm scratching my head because it's like they buy Vertical Response.
I know. It doesn't seem like a good match, does it?
It does not.
Well, they're trying to shift from checks to, small business services or business services. Mm.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
It does, but it seems like from a cultural perspective, it would be a tough marriage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that.
And you're sitting in San Francisco and your Vertical Response, you're like, oh, great.
Right.
Cube World's
coming to my office.
Yeah. Unless you're one of the founders or whatever and can cash out. So, but it was a good move for Deluxe in their quest to reinvent themselves.
Well, it is interesting to see that they did see they've seen profits rise at Deluxe, which is, you know, been a long time coming. It's been a long time since they've seen profits rise at the Lux.
Yeah, they made a whopping $48 million.
But still, it's
better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. And, you know, you've seen a lot of false starts out of Deluxe as far as what they wanted to, you know, what they wanted to accomplish and grow and change. So it was, it's interesting to see that, you know, hey, they're making some headway. Though if you dig into those numbers, you see their check business is in the toilet and, you know, they lost a ton in some of their other segments. But
Here's what I don't understand is I own a small business. So do both of you guys. We have tons of small business clients between us. And I know none of them that use any of Deluxe services. And I know I don't.
Nope.
Totally, right. Totally not on my radar screen at all.
Right.
Nope.
I wonder
whereas the Google is, you know.
The Google?
The Google.
Yeah, yeah.
They're on the interwebs. Seems to provide a lot of services to a lot of the clients that we work with. So.
Well, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I remember once walking into Petter's group when I was helping Scott Meyer when he was temporarily the CEO of YFly, that social network that Tom Petters was funding because his son was involved with two of his buddies. And then his son got killed and he kept funding it. But I remember walking into the corporate headquarters and looking at the board of all the companies that Petters had. And the only one at that point I recognized was Polaroid. And had never heard of any of the others. And they're all in the web space and web applications, everything else. Had no clue. Had never even heard of them before.
Well, it's because they were all shell companies.
Because they were all shell companies, yeah. Yeah. But here's my point. My point is yes, Deluxe has bought some brands, but for the most part, I in some respects, it feels like the same thing. I mean, I'm not accusing them of anything or I'm not libeling them and so on. So I want to be very clear about that, but it's just that they're not on my radar screen at all and nobody I know of. So anyway.
Well, so clearly if it's not important to Steve Borsch, it's not important.
Yeah. Why? Thanks, Phil. Oh man.
So, well, yeah. Everybody wears their wristbands. You know, what would Steve do? So.
Well, it's about time.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tim, I'm assuming that you wanted to highlight this little article on the CIO of Starbucks.
Yeah, the only reason I put it in is that it's a 2-page thing on Forbes. Big, you know, it's like probably in the magazine as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interview with Stephen Gillette.
Yep.
And you learn absolutely nothing about him. No, really? I'm serious. I mean, it's devoid of any content.
Well, Stephen Gillette he was at Best Buy for what, 15 minutes? How long was he here?
9 months, maybe.
Was it 9 months? Was it even that long? Really?
No. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It was enough to take, you know, a lot of money out of the company.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, he does say in here that his role at Best Buy was at the heart of the transformation that organization was undertaking.
Oh, great. Take some credit.
Yeah.
He was gone as soon as, what's his name?
Jolie
arrived. Yeah, he was like he headed for the exits as soon as he came. So well, I don't think he has anything to do with the transformation.
No, I don't either.
No. But he's been able to spin it into saying, you know, he was there.
Yeah, that's just a bunch of crap, you know.
Yeah. But, well, I will tell you though that if you are hired, because I've lived through it twice now, if you're hired by
the old guy.
And yeah. You're one of the execs. I mean,
yep.
It's just, you forget it. Oh. You may as well leave.
You're done.
Yep.
Yeah, I lived that dream.
Yeah, exactly. God. Oh, my God.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
But anyway, I just, you know, it was kind of a slow week for local news, so I thought that was mildly interesting, but
yeah.
Well, I was
expecting to learn his secrets to his success. Yeah. And, the only thing I can surmise is he's incredibly lucky.
There's that.
Yeah.
That's right.
Uh-oh. So I'd like to meet him in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well, I'm putting something in the show notes, another Minnesota story. Elizabeth Borsch, with her BA in sociology,
yes.
Uh-huh. Was hired by Best Buy Corporate.
Wow, nice.
And she starts Monday in her new position in HR.
Oh,
so Yeah.
Congratulations to Elizabeth.
Yeah.
So I thought she doesn't go by Biz anymore?
No, she goes by Liz.
Liz now. Yep.
Well,
Liz.
Okay. Oh, okay. So the reason right. that she found this out is apparently, well, she met a whole bunch of women at the U of M mm-hmm. in all these different classes. And it turns out that two of them are friends already. And they're from various countries in the Middle East, you know, one's from Lebanon, one's from Tunisia and one from somewhere else or whatever. And all three of them once sort of confronted her and said, did you know that Biz means tit in Arabic?
Ooh.
She's like, what? Ah. Yeah, it's slang for a breast. And, and she's like, oh my God. Well, like literally within 2 hours, she is like changing everything. So,
wow.
She was mortified. Absolutely mortified.
I wonder what Phil means in another language.
Yeah.
Yike.
Probably nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like this.
Oh, yeah. God.
Oh, how funny. Oh, poor Liz. Poor Liz.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that she's, she started at a store. And now she's working for corporate. Gee, I know somebody else that was on a trajectory like that at Best Buy. Who was that?
Well, come on. Are you serious? I don't know.
Well, I believe he rose to CEO.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that'll be her someday. She'll be, yeah.
She could be CEO. Could be. Come on.
That's right. That's right. Well, in other stories... Outside
of the state, national, the geeky stuff. Yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, so
the big stories of the week.
Yeah, so Google reveals Chromecast, but it was my understanding that this was an AirPlay device, like AirPlay, so you could push from your Android device to your TV. But then I'm reading Daring Fireball. John Gruber says it's not that at all.
No.
And I reread the Verge article, and I'm like, wait a minute, what is it?
It's much more clever.
Okay.
Instead of pushing content to it, you use your phone or your tablet as a sort of remote control. Mm-hmm. And the unit itself, using Chrome OS that it's running and presumably the Chrome browser on it, pulls the content from whatever cloud service it's coming from, okay. whether it be Netflix or the Google Play Store or you know, other websites that are going to support this new standard. So it's a very clever kind of way that's different than AirPlay, although it does a similar thing, which is, you know, you take your phone out and you say, I want to play Netflix on my TV, and it does it.
Mm-hmm.
But no data is going from your phone to the Chromecast.
Okay. Okay.
It's going direct from the Chromecast to the TV. So it's a unexpected product, and I think it's going to make a huge impact.
And it's $35.
Yeah, and they're totally sold out everywhere. I didn't even find out about it until after it was sold out.
Yeah. Oh, how funny.
It was at the end of the day, and I'm like, my son texted me, and he's like, yeah, let's order one of these at Best Buy. And I'm like, what? What is this?
I read the article, and it was a 2-week turnaround if you ordered it, and then it was a 4-week turnaround. When I finally ordered mine, it was an 8 to 10 week turnaround. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is going to be a big deal.
Well, I thought it was interesting from a lot of different perspectives, but one of them was that they're supporting all the OSs essentially.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they didn't make it an exclusive to Android kind of device. And I thought they were going to do that.
So this is the equivalent of like the iPod for Google. I mean, this will be a ubiquitous sort of play.
Yeah.
And I think that in a very short period of time, this will be the dominant platform in the living room.
Well, I think it's interesting because it's fairly portable. I mean, it really is a fairly portable device.
Well, it's very portable. It's just a three inch dongle thing. You know?
Yeah. But as far as, you know, moving it from room to room, and, you know, if you've got a, you know, if you're not like Steve and have everything hooked up to the, you know, a digital service of some kind, it makes it a little easier. That's for sure.
Well, and I hate to say this, but Mr. Network Boy right here, I have to completely rebuild my network this weekend.
Why is that? What'd you do?
Well, you break? I didn't break anything except I bought a new Airport Extreme, you know, the new AC version, the tall one. And Wi-Fi's dropping like crazy on devices. And everybody's bitching at me. So, you know, Dad, the Wi-Fi's not working on my iPhone. You know, it's like, oh, my God, seriously? So it turns out one of the geniuses told me that this does happen every once in a while when you export a config from any router, whether it's, you know, a Cisco or a Apple or anything, and then you import that config file into the new router and keep the name of the network the same, that if you don't go around and reboot all the devices, that they will not be able to, you know, they're essentially looking at the old config or running the old config, I should say. And you end up with all sorts of issues. So the first thing I did was go around and unplug and reboot everything, all the Apple TVs and everything. That didn't work. And then he basically said, you need to rename your network so that it'll force all the devices to purge their existing cache and look at the new network. So I keep saying to myself, what the hell does Joe Sixpack do?
He goes out and buys a Chromecast.
Oh, my God. I can barely do all this stuff. And, you know, I understand how it all works. You know, it's like, my God. Anyway. But, yeah, I think the Chromecast is going to be awesome.
Did you get one? Have you ordered one?
I have not yet, no.
Tim, did you order one?
Not yet. I'm going to wait till they're back in stock at Best Buy.
Well, I'm going to look in. Yeah, I'm going to see if they're on Amazon because we're Amazon Prime. So
they're out. Yeah.
They're out too, though.
Yeah.
And so is Google Play.
Yep.
Well, so the next story that I thought was kind of interesting, this when smart homes get hacked.
Yeah, I put that in because it's sort of a good segue to Steve's security tip of the week.
Yeah, it's very much a good segue.
Well, so,
It is. I mean, it's I love this. I love you know, the potential to have fun with somebody is right there. I mean, being able to hack into their device that, you know, their smart home, turn their lights on and off.
Well, not only that, but if they have one of those Schlage Wi-Fi front door locks, you can open it up and sneak in their house in the middle of the night and scare the hell out of them. I'm kidding.
I don't,
because you get shot.
I was going to say, I don't think I'm going to do that in this day and age.
Yeah. No kidding.
I don't think so.
But no, but this article is all about a guy that basically got his way in to somebody's smart router and was able to play around. And this actually, there are tremendous number of articles because I'm following the Internet of Things space. A lot of articles about device security. And there really aren't any models that exist that everybody's following for device security. It's just sort of, oh, well, this is how we've always done security to internal networks, and we're going to do it the same way. And yet you've got all the apps to control and everything else, and they're not all following the same security models. So it's going to be interesting. SmartThings, though, the local DC and Minnesota startup, they, right from the ground up, built security in as a primary concern. So I think that's a good thing.
Well, I think it's very much a primary concern, but it's a little wild westy right now as people try to figure this out. I think we'll get to a point where there is a standard and you'll see it, but it's, I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Start turning lights on and off, opening garage doors. As I think about what I've got in my SmartThings pack, and I think, you know, set off alarms, you know, motion detectors and things like that. So,
jeez.
But that is a good segue, though, into Steve's security tip of the week. If we only had some sort of way of announcing
like
that we were going,
off.
Yeah, that we were actually going into that particular segment. I wonder, what would that be?
What would that sound like?
Steve's security tip of the week.
All right, let's get into that security tip of the week. So let's talk about keeping your data safe, especially in a day when there's a ton of prying going on and so forth. And in fact, there's a new article that the feds are putting heat on web firms to get their master encryption keys for secure socket layers for SSL. So when you log in on HTTPS, they want to be able to actually look into that data stream so that they can see it in real time. And so it's just, it's getting really ugly out there. And for those of us that use Dropbox, you may or may not know that it's not secure at the Dropbox level. They can actually see your files. Same thing with Google Drive. Box is the only one that actually has encryption at the server level. And then there's also open options like OwnCloud, which I've actually set up and really been wrestling with. It's not easy.
Yeah, the performance. I saw that on KnowHow. Akhtar just did it this week. He was saying that the performance is not so good.
It's really not. So not only is the performance not good, but I'm expecting that my host is going to throw up on people using OwnCloud. Because, I mean, can you imagine the data transfer that if people start using that on their hosting accounts? It'll be ugly. But anyway, so for a long time, I've been using just the Mac OS X disk utility to create a disk image and use 256-bit encryption. And in that disk image is stuff that I have. So I put that whole disk image inside of Dropbox. And in there is stuff for my wife and kids, should I get hit by a bus. There's stuff in there that they need to take care of everything. Make sure Minovate keeps going.
And, that's the priority.
That's the priority.
Because really, that is their financial security for the future.
Exactly. Well, you guys would buy me out, right? And send a huge, gigantic check to my family.
A ginormous check.
Anyhow, I've become quite enamored with TrueCrypt, which is an open source disk encryption software, Windows 7, Vista XP, Mac OS X, and Linux. And it is very geeky. I'll put a link in the show notes to a Wikipedia article that I think is actually better than the site itself. The site's very geeky. But TrueCrypt, it's easy to use. You can create very sophisticated encrypted disk images that mount automatically. So you can keep the thing in your keychain in OS X or on Windows. On the Windows version, you can actually create a hidden operating system. So let's say you've got your laptop and you come back into the U.S. from being abroad and they say, you've got to give us the password for this so we can look at it. So you give them the password, they look at it, but actually all of your encrypted files are running in this hidden operating system. And so you can keep stuff from prying eyes. Now, that's the good news for those of us that are not criminals. The bad news is criminals know this too. So there's this, I have this internal push-pull that I'm sure you guys probably have too on, I don't want the federal government being able to capture 100% of everything I do and store it until they have the technology to basically decrypt everything. But at the same time, I don't want the bad guys to have this either. Right. With all the plans to what they're going to do with some nuclear dirty bomb, you know, or whatever. And so I kind of go back and forth on this in my own mind over and over and over and over again.
Well, as I was looking through the TrueCrypt site, I found a little note in the download section that was sort of intriguing to me that says, if you intend to host our files on your server, please instead consider linking to this page. It will help us prevent spreading of obsolete versions, which we believe critical when security software is concerned. Now, if you're all of a sudden tying into something that's available, I mean, just by not using this stuff on your own server and linking to it on their servers, it seems to me that all of a sudden you're not nearly as secure again.
Well, I think what they meant by that, well, in fact, I'm pretty sure what they meant by that is anything that's descriptive. So let's say that you have a security site and you want to have a tutorial on there about TrueCrypt, and you basically just copy all the text from their page.
I see.
And post it on your own tutorial page. They're basically saying,
I see what you're saying because now that I read it, it was like, huh?
No, I know. And this stuff is, you know, the complexity of this is so, so high. And there's a guy that I know that was the former chief technology officer at United Health Group. And he and I had a conversation a while back about security and web applications and everything else. And he said, you know, Steve, he says, it's literally a daily change. I mean, the amount of stuff that they're trying to accomplish is beyond comprehension to try to protect their files. Mm-hmm. And so I go through this TrueCrypt page on Wikipedia, for example, and they go in here and they talk about different ways of being able to decrypt this stuff and hack it. And it's like, oh my God, how does anybody stay on top of this? So the point is most people don't. They just don't encrypt. They just let everything go across free. But TrueCrypt is extremely easy to use. So at a minimum, if you have files that you want to protect and you're on OS X, just do a disk image. If you're on Linux or Windows, strongly recommend TrueCrypt. And choose 256-bit encryption. Because so far that's supposedly impossible to break. One more thing. TrueCrypt also uses multiple encryption algorithms. So you can daisy chain these encryption algorithms. So you can essentially have two or three or four in line, and you can, you know, encrypt it and then encrypt it again with a different one and then encrypt the encrypted file with a different one and yada, yada, you know, three or four times deep. And then you may as well forget it. You're never going to be able to, nobody can break that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, once again, Steve, for another week, I feel just that much safer.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you,
Steve. Please be careful out there.
Thank you, Steve.
So we have to talk about this thing that you stuck in here, Phil, about why do sites this ugly still exist? God.
Well, because we do a lot of combing through sites and stories and things like that when we're getting ready for Minovate. And, you know, it's up to you to decide if it's worth it or not. But we go through it and I come across websites that, we spend a lot of time on sites that report news stories cover what's happening in tech, but then you'll stumble across a site and just go, God dang, this is still ugly. And it's a site that you felt like it was designed in the late 90s. It's just so God awful. And I kind of wonder, why is it that sort of thing still happens? Is it strictly a laziness factor? Is it strictly a utilitarian? Or does it just not really matter to anybody how the site looks as long as it's delivering the goods?
Well, I think it's all about it's not primary. So you put a screenshot of kstp.com in there.
Yes.
And it's just a bunch of links.
It's a lot of links. It's a lot of... I mean, it's crowded, it's garbagey looking, it's, you know, for a TV news site, the video is buried in the bottom of the page, and it just struck me as, why is this so damned ugly?
Yeah, well, it's all about the content management system they're using, because, you know, you can deliver stuff in a multitude of different ways, and it's really, that's really what it's all about. Now, I will tell you that, you know, looking at this site, kstp.com, and comparing it to twincities.com, how it used to be, they were so similar. And I felt that same exact way about twincities.com, but I don't know if you've looked, but twincities.com, you know, they've really stepped up their game. Their site looks really great.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Just go to twincities.com.
They still have the horrible ads in the background, though?
Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, the other thing, too, is that some of their stuff is broken. So, like...
Well, that's, I mean, you're right. I mean, this is a much cleaner, better-looking site. True. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Very much so. So, you look at these things and you think, why, you know, why are the other sites still out there? And then I, you know,
it
I did
costs
some
look, a lot of money to update.
Yeah,
these things.
Oh yeah, yeah, there's no doubt. There's nothing, but it costs a lot of money to buy a new camera. It costs a lot of money to build a new news set.
Right.
You know, isn't it? We rely more and more on the web to get our news when we want it, where we want it. It seems to me that web really needs to be a priority for any news outlet, any news organization.
Well. I noticed too on TwinCities.com that it's not responsive, the site. And that was the first thing I looked at. And then I'll try to find this link because there was an open debate on, it was CNN's interactive media guy. It was somebody for Rupert Murdoch's company, his parent company. But anyway, but they were having this debate about responsive or not responsive. And it was their position that it's no longer really necessary to do responsive. In fact, people want the existing site because it renders just fine on virtually every device.
Yeah, I suppose.
And I thought, that's really interesting. So, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with the smart guys, smart folks who are working on this stuff. But yeah, KSTP, it's like, hello.
Yeah. It's, if you do a built with, it's some old IIS ASP.net thing.
Served at GoDaddy.
Well, is it
I
really?
I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah,
yeah it is.
Is
yeah.
it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, look, you're right. I mean, it's a priority thing. Where do you spend your money? But, it seems to me that, I still come across, and I don't want to pick on KSTP because I decided to say, you know, okay, let's just Google best TV news sites, you know, websites. And again, you get to a bunch of Webby Award type things and you go through them and it's like, even these award winning sites.
Are they bad?
They're not that attractive. I mean, you know, award winning sites that... I don't know why newspapers feel that their websites have to look like the front page of a newspaper. Because, I mean, the reason...
It's all about metaphor. Yeah,
they're run by old people. Come on. I want it to look that way.
Well, I'm no spring chicken, and I know better than that.
I know, but you're looking, you know...
Go ahead and say
it. You're the top 1%, Phil.
Ooh!
Just saying it.
Tim, thanks.
He's finally 1% of something.
Wow, that sounds great. Thank you. The top 1%.
You're a 1%er, Phil.
Oh, hoo-hoo!
Yeah.
You're very kind, Tim. Not necessarily true, but very kind.
No, but I mean, if you ran this, it would be different.
Maybe.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's very difficult to do this.
Yeah.
Man, there are like a million trackers on this thing, too.
Yeah. And did you by any chance, and I know this is probably somewhat more on the personal side, but have you seen the new Code 42 website?
No.
Over Code 42?
Why would I go there?
I don't know. If
I mean,
you would
it's just a corporate
there.
Website. I might go to crashplan.com, but not right. Code 42.
Right? Oh, it actually is very nice.
It's a very nice site now.
Yeah.
Go to the careers section. Oh. They have a video header in the careers section.
See careers. A video header of like what?
I don't know. Your random people. It's just, I think it's a very interesting, I like the site. They've done a re-image of the, a revamp of the website. They revamped their logo and that sort of thing. But I found that a very nice site.
Yeah, it's very fresh. So, I like it a lot. I wonder if that's an animated GIF.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Is it GIF?
It
depends on if you're from the East Coast or the West Coast.
No, it depends. No, the guy that invented it, graphics interchange format, was at a conference probably 3 months ago and came out because there was a big meme on the web about Is it GIF or JIF? And I always said GIF because it's graphics, not graphics.
You mean you always said GIF?
I always said GIF.
Yeah, because not GIF. Yeah.
Right. And he came out and said, no, when we first did it, it was GIF. And it's always been GIF. And so
that's a GIF.
I've been slapped around by people that I even did a post once.
There's no J in there. Come on. No,
I know.
And it's graphic GIF.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, even the inventors aren't always right, you know.
Well,
that's right.
Yeah, I know. There's that.
Is it Linux or Linux?
Because it's Linus Torvalds. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Jeez. Well,
you could go around and around on that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Listen, today, you know, we record on Saturday, guys. So today is Coder Dojo. I noticed in following one of the founders or one of the people that involved in Coder Dojo, they're doing Arduino today at Coder Dojo.
Oh, sweet.
I think is very cool, which is going on. Which Coder Dojo, I think, is an interesting concept of, you know, helping kids get into, you know, programming and computers. And I think it's very exciting stuff. So that's going on today, the 27th. We've got
Ed Jam.
Tell me about Ed Jam.
Well, so Ed Jam is all about the same kind of thing. You know, it's like a hackathon. It's a 48-hour event where they develop working prototypes of educational offerings and designing software and things of that nature. So I haven't been to one, but it should be interesting. And it's all about building working prototypes. So I think what's interesting is you guys know the whole thing about the massively open online courses, MOOCs, about what, you know, MIT and Harvard and Stanford, and they're all in the game. And there's a lot of interesting design that's going on relative to best methods to present online courses and to create online engagement. And huge debates going on right now in the educational community. And so what's happening is people are building prototypes just like this, at things like this. And they're basically essentially jamming together all of this thought leadership relative to how, you know, what's the best way to engage a student rather than just, here's a video, now answer these questions. Because that's kind of the model now. And so it'll be interesting to see where this ends up and what comes out of it. I wish we could see some of it. So,
also I noticed we don't have it in the upcoming events, but an event that I'm heading off to on the 2nd of August, which is next Friday, Startup School Minnesota.
Have you
seen this? This is being sponsored by MiniStar and Tech.mn. It's a day with some of the local entrepreneurs like Justin Koffenberg and George Reese and Matthew Dornquist and
Chip Pearson.
So that should be interesting to hear from some of these folks. Have you seen this? I don't know Chip Pearson. Do you guys, either of you, know Chip Pearson from Jamf Software?
I don't.
He's got
I've met him at
He's got a great picture in here. He looks like some duck hunter, you know. It's got, so I'm anxious to head to this. So it's called Startup School Minnesota. Happens on next Friday. We'll put the information in the show notes.
You're laying down some serious coin here for this.
Yeah, I am.
$60.
$60.
Wow.
I mean, that's, you could almost buy two Chromecasts for that.
Yeah, but there's tax and shipping.
There's so. Yeah, so you, yeah. I find it interesting. I think, I admire a lot of these guys, so it'll be interesting to hear what they have to say and what their advice is. And it'll be also interesting to see if they put some time into crafting a message for people, or is it just, you know, show up and say, hi, this is what I did.
Yeah, right. Well, I also wanted to just emphasize this Grace Hopper event, this Women in Computing thing. I ran it by my brother-in-law, who used to work down the hall from her, and he's not in good health, and he's like, "Yeah, I want to go to that. I want to figure out how to go to it." It's like, "Hey, man, you know, you should," because he's just like, this guy's got like 97 computers in his house, and he's probably 72, and he's still jamming on stuff, creating stuff. It's just hilarious. Anyway, but he says nothing but good things about Grace Hopper and how smart she was. So what a great role model for women. And then the Life Science Lean-In is still coming up. And
the cyber, yeah.
Yeah. Go on, sorry. I'm sorry. Well, I'm just going to say that
it's in October.
Yeah. Yeah, stay in touch with what's
it's right going around on. The corner.
Yep. Yeah.
And the Cybersecurity Summit.
Right at the end of October. That's
right.
No, we're planning ahead. We're planning ahead.
That's right.
And thanks whoever just put in who's now including the link to how to pronounce
that's right.
Linux.
Thanks very much
for putting that in.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Well, what a service to everyone listening.
Oh man.
All right.
Oh man.
Oh geez. So,
well, listen, we'll see what's happening next week. It was an interesting week this weekend. And so we'll find out what shakes out next week. Once again on
the Minovate Gang podcast. Take care,
guys.
Have
a good week. Thanks, guys.
See you.